What are microeconomics? And please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right, so now that that's out of the way, let's get into this. What is going on, crypto family? So today I'm going to be doing another quick and dirty video, and to be quite honest, another huge gross oversimplification of microeconomics. But before we dive into microeconomics, we should go over some of the basic ideas so we're kind of all on the same page here. All right, so there's a few ideas in economics that can kind of help you understand things a little better. The first is scarcity, which is simply the idea that we as people have unlimited wants, but have limited or finite resources. The next term is opportunity cost. This can be summed up as simply as everything produced has a cost, or another way to look at it is it's the cost of making a decision. Every decision we make ultimately means we decided to give up something else in return to make that decision. For example, let's say that you're looking for a job and you have two interviews lined up. You knock both interviews out of the park and both companies want to hire you. You'll end up having to weigh the opportunity cost of making that decision. One company might offer, you know, more pay and more hours, but might require you to travel and be away from your house more often, whereas the other company might offer to pay you less, but a more predictable schedule. Ultimately, your decision will cost you something. That is what opportunity cost is in a nutshell. Next in economics, there are factors of production. This is the land, the labor, the capital, and ultimately the resources required to produce a product or service. I mean, it's pretty common sense stuff. Your car didn't just create itself. Your ice cream from the grocery store didn't just happen. Someone had to source the necessary things to create the products, deliver them to be distributed, etc. So microeconomics is the group of all the little gears and springs that keep in motion the giant mechanism of the market. In this video, we're going to see how they all work and kind of what makes them tick. To start off, everything starts with you, the consumer. You are the motor that sets everything into motion. All the gears of the mechanism revolve around the principle that people have needs or wants to satisfy. In other words, it's the idea of scarcity. Your needs create the demand, and then the market adjusts to help satisfy or provide the products to fulfill the market needs. In a free market economy, demand and the supply share a unique relationship with one another, usually balancing each other out using price as a tipping point. Here's a summary of how it works. You can define the demand for a good or service as the number of units that the consumers purchase for each price point offered by the market. The supply is the number of units that the market is willing to provide for each price point. Price is the key. A lower price bears a higher demand, while a higher price increases the offer. By tracing a graph, you can determine that the balance point where the curve of the demand and the curve of the offer intersect, that point is the equilibrium price. Then there's the equilibrium quantity, which is the price where the number of products that consumers want to buy and the quantity of products the producer wants to produce is the same. At any other point, there is an imbalance, and the market spontaneously creates this pressure to push toward the equilibrium. Let's use candy as an example. Who doesn't love candy, right? Let's say that due to high prices, the candies market has increased its production to the point of exceeding demand. As a consequence, a lot of the candies supplied to the stores remain on the shelves. After a while, candy companies realize that by keeping this pace, their next quarter is going to be a disaster. Some of these companies will decide that it's better to profit less than not at all and will lower their prices. Their competitors will also decrease their prices to keep their spot in the market. Candies then become more affordable. Therefore, people will buy more sweets and demand will rise towards the equilibrium point of production. What if it was the other way around? What if candies sell at a very convenient price? Well, kids will buy candies every day and the demand will rise, but the candy companies won't increase production because of the poor price. Having a rising demand with the same production volumes over time will result in empty store shelves and kids hungry for sugar. Candy companies at that point will see the new opportunity and raise their prices to increase their margin over their production. In response, the demand will decline toward the equilibrium price. If, however, the demand doesn't decline, then it would make sense to ramp up production to meet the increased demand. Next, there's production theory. This is the process of converting inputs into outputs. So in our earlier example, it would be getting sugar, food coloring, flavors, etc., and turning it into candy. The company wants to keep these costs of these goods low so they can maximize their profits. However, they don't want to get inferior goods that make horrible tasting candy that nobody's going to buy. Utility theory is comparable to production theory. Consumers will choose to purchase and consume a combination of goods that will maximize their happiness or utility, depending on how much they have to spend. Utility is important because it directly affects demand. So the horrible tasting candy would have a very low utility and the demand wouldn't be there. This is how a free market works, but its mechanics can vary depending on the economical model of reference. Capitalism, for example, is focused on production volumes and wealth. In a capitalistic economy, the market is saturated with products for every possible need, and all product cycles are shortened and stripped to the bones to keep the wheels in motion in the fastest pace possible. The producers are focused on maximizing production and finding new untapped market niches to expand. Consumers, on the other hand, keep buying to seek satisfaction and sometimes display status. Capitalism can have some harsh cultural drawbacks, however. One example is the creation of debt to acquire items and effort to keep up with the market, or things like fast fashion that promotes a constant waste of resources just to keep alive a saturated market. Despite this, the constant competition promotes progress. And thanks to massive production volumes, high-end goods like computers, they become accessible to the average consumer. The classic opposite of capitalism is socialism, where the needs of the consumers rule over the offer, dictating what is produced and the production volumes. The production facilities are common property, and the needs of the community are the absolute point of reference. However, it's just a theoretical model. A similar system is communism, where the government detains all production power and the economy is designed to sustain the state and provide for the citizens. This model found some applications in the real world in the USSR and China. The main benefit of communism is that even the poorest are provided with the basic tools and resources to live in a dignified way. But the drawbacks are freaking massive. An overextended period of time, the economy becomes stagnant and underdeveloped to the point that the total collapse can only be avoided by switching toward a more competitive model. As I said in the beginning, the market is a mechanism, has its own speed and rhythm. It can be sped up or slowed down, but it's important to understand some basics on what makes it tick. This way you aren't caught off guard, right? We're surprised when things change. So in closing, I hope this super quick and dirty video and this explanation of microeconomics has brought you some value. Hopefully it encourages you to do some of your own research into this subject and see how things run your area of the world. Let me know in the comments below too, what I left out or what you want me to cover next. Hey peeps, just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and owns several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. And one last thing before we get into this, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the family.